Choosing a mortgage is a really big decision. There are a lot of choices you need to make that can affect the amount you pay and the flexibility you have if your circumstances change. Robert McLister is a mortgage planner at IntelliMortgage and the founder of RateSpy.com. He joins us now. Hello.
Good to be here.
What are some things you should know about yourself and your risk tolerance and even your financial circumstances before you even start talking? So whether it's your first mortgage or you're up for renewal, what are some things that you should know about thyself?
So a lot of people come to us and say, what is the best mortgage term? And there is no such thing. So that's like asking, what's the best flavor of ice cream?
Chocolate. I can't even believe you asked that question. The answer is chocolate.
No,
maybe salted caramel. Like, I'd be willing to put that as a close second.
See, I would have said brownie chunk. So it
that's good.
Depends.
Just as long as you weren't like pralines and cream or strawberry or something like that. It's ridiculous. Point well taken. I love that you brought ice cream into our conversation.
So, you know, to answer that question, the typical next question we get is, where do you think rates are going? Right? Because people want to know whether they should lock in or not. The fundamental decision criteria is what type of borrower you are and what kind of risk sensitivity you have. Mm. So I've come up with this lovely little acronym called IDEAS to help you figure out which term you're best suited for.
Ooh, okay.
IDEAS. So the I in IDEAS stands for income. Do you have a provable, stable income? The D in IDEA stands for debt. So do you have a reasonable debt ratio relative to your income? The E in IDEA stands for equity. So do you have at least 20% equity so that later down the road, if you need to refinance, you can. A stands for assets. So do you have assets to fall back on if times get tough or interest rates go up and your payment goes up? And lastly, the S in IDEAS stands for sensitivity to risk. So are you going to freak out every time you see open the newspaper and see the Bank of Canada is going to hike rates next month? So you look at all those fundamental factors, and that helps you determine whether you have the financial ability and the stomach for a variable rate mortgage.
I think you should change the S to stomach.
Stomach?
I think that
stomach,
there you please. Go. You're welcome. Okay. That S is for stomach instead of sensitivity. I think that's
pay
brilliant.
Your royalties for that.
Yeah, you know you don't. It's free. You're welcome. So term is one thing. What about let's talk term. Let's talk amortization. Those kinds of big picture things. How do you think that through?
So amortization, let's talk about that. So if you have a short amortization, say a 10-year remaining amortization versus a 30-year, you can take a little bit more risk because the impact of rising rates is less if you have a shorter amortization. Another thing that's key is your credit. So if you have bad credit and you're trying to dig yourself out of a credit hole, then you want to be in a shorter term because you don't want to pay the sky-high non-prime interest rates. You want to, you know, take 12 to 18 months to rehabilitate your credit, and then you can look at a prime lender at much better rates. And then the other thing is the spread. So the spread between a five-year fix, for example, and a variable or a short, you know, one-year or two-year fixed. That's a key number. So the wider that spread is, the better your odds, other things equal, in a variable or a shorter term.
One of the things I learned about mortgages the first time round was that you can fix your variable payment, which blew my mind because I always thought, oh, well, variable payment. And then I noticed my variable payment was going down as rates were going down. And I said, no, I don't want that. I can still pay that. And my mortgage person said, well, you can set that number. And why I think that's such an important point is a lot of people feel like, ooh, I can't do a variable because it's too uncertain. When in fact, on some products, maybe not all, they can set their payment. It just then what shifts is the amount that goes to principal versus interest.
That's right. So a couple of points there. So most floating rate mortgages have a floating payment. So it goes up and down with prime rate. But what you're talking about is technically called a variable rate mortgage. So the one with a floating payment, that's called an adjustable rate mortgage.
Right.
So if you get a variable rate mortgage, yes, you can lock in your payment so that if prime goes up or down, your payment stays the same. Now, the only time that would ever change is if, for example, rates went up so much that you're not even paying the interest. In that case, the lender would adjust your payment.
Features. There are a lot of features you can get. I assume there's a cost associated with them because they can give you flexibility and, you know, the lender doesn't have the certain income stream if you're taking a mortgage vacation. Tell us about some of the features out there, the ones that you would sell to a sibling and the ones that you would keep your family members away from. I'm sure you treat your clients the same as your family members, but you get my point, right?
So you want to make sure you have flexibility when you need it. And so for examples of that, If you're young, you're getting your first home, the odds are pretty good that you're going to be moving in the next 5 years. Or if you're, you know, you get a mortgage, the odds are, generally speaking, people are going to renegotiate their mortgage within a five-year span. So if knowing that, you want to make sure that you have flexibility built into your mortgage. And that flexibility can be a low penalty. So the big six banks are notorious for their high fixed rate mortgage penalties, the interest rate differential penalties. 15 to 20% of people actually pay those penalties.
Wow.
So, you know, we could be talking the difference between, you know, a bank and a non-bank lender. We could be talking thousands of dollars in additional penalties to break your mortgage early. So you got to keep that in mind. Portability. Let's say, you're one of these folks that do move within a five-year span. You want to make sure you can move your mortgage to that new property and not have to pay a penalty. And some lenders only give you like one day to move your mortgage. So your old property and your new property have to close in the same day. And that's very hard to line up. So, you know, odds are greater in that case, you're going to pay a penalty. And lastly, you want to make sure that you have a competitive lender if you ever need to refinance with that lender. So, if your lender allows what's called a blend and increase, you can add more money to your mortgage without paying a penalty in many cases. And if your lender is competitive on the rate, then you don't have to go elsewhere. And it can save you, you know, switching fees.
How loyal should consumers be to their legacy financial institution? And I know you're a mortgage planner. You work with lots of different ones. If I was talking to a mortgage specialist from a bank, they would have, I think, a different answer than you would have. But how do you think that through? Because so often people just get the renewal, they call up, they renew, or they could go and have the conversation with the lending specialist at the institution, and then they just renew.
So you owe zero loyalty to a lender. You owe loyalty to your wallet. And so you want to do what's best for you. Now, that doesn't mean you have to move. Maybe if, you know, all things told, the switching costs never or whatever make it non-economical to switch lenders. At the end of the day, you want to compare the full market. And you want to find not only the best rate, but the best flexibility, because typically where you see the biggest differences in borrowing cost on a mortgage are after closing. So it's not, you know, you saving 10 basis points on your mortgage up front that saves you money. It's you having that flexibility where you don't have to pay a huge penalty after closing, or you can add more money very economically. That's going to save you the most over the long term.
Do you ever feel used by looky-loos who are calling up and like, hey, Rob, I need you to get me the best. And then they take it right back to their institution and say, look what Rob gave me. Can you match them?
I don't. A lot of brokers do, but I don't. And, I put myself in the customer's shoes because I want the best deal. So if you're not going to give me the best deal if your rate is significantly higher based on the service and whatever else the value you're providing me, then, again, I owe nothing to you as a consumer. I'm going to go to, you know, whoever's going to save my family the most amount of money. So typically I just tell them, you know, look online. And I give them a couple places where they can go online and find a really good deal. And regardless, no matter what kind of relationship you have with your banker or broker, you always got to keep them honest. So you got to get that second opinion. So go online, search, you know, best three-year fixed mortgage or best variable mortgage rate, and see if the number they're giving you is reasonable.
What is the number one, or maybe number one and number two, variables that lenders deem to be the most important in cutting clients the very best rate and package of features that they have? Because, you know, they'll say it's a lot about relationship. Sure, that may well be. But as you look at your financial photograph as a consumer, what are the one, two, or three numbers that really are going to drive this for you?
So you have to have good credit. That's just step number one. So you want to be, at least average credit or above. So if you're 750 credit score or above, that's a great place to start. You obviously have to have stable, provable income. And that can be a problem sometimes for self-employed borrowers. You have to have...
Or those that are working in the mafia. Who are trying to hide everything. That's a problem.
Yes. Those are your typical stated income.
Yes.
You want to have reasonable credit or debt ratios, rather. So if your ratio of debt to income is significantly over 40%.
And that includes all debt, right? Like, does it include student loans?
It includes any monthly debt obligation.
So student loans, credit cards, line of credit.
car payment, stuff. You name it.
Do you have to declare debt to family members in that equation?
If it's not reporting on your credit bureau, generally speaking, it's not used.
Okay.
Yeah. And the size of your mortgage. You know, if you come to me as a broker and you have a $100,000 mortgage, you might get a different rate than someone that comes to me with a $600,000 mortgage because there's more profit in it and I can afford to give you a better deal because, you know, the time to process that $100,000 mortgage or $600,000 mortgage is about the same.
Huh. So I should buy a more expensive house so I've got a $600,000 mortgage. Is that what you're saying?
To keep robbing business,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, that's exactly. I will never do that. Robert, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
Robert McLister is with IntelliMortgage and RateSpy.com.